So one of the most popular gift sites, as many of us know, around this time of the year is Etsy. And so I would like to start this morning by making fun of some of the worst Christmas cards I've seen available right now on Etsy. Now, if you've gotten these or if you like these, that's fine, but I think some of these are a little over the top with the Christmas love sentiment. So here's the first one, a gingerbread man. Merry Christmas, my love. You were made for me. Aw, that's wonderful. The next one, with love at Christmas. Yeah. Number three, you're not just my Christmas present, you're my forever present. I love you. Number four, we were meant to be. These are just getting so cringe. Okay, the last one, I love you so much. So there's a lot of genuine warmth and loving feelings around the holidays. Maybe, you know, touch on the saccharine side. It's sort of it's the Hallmark movie syndrome. I mean, Frank, your gingerbread Christmas is accepted from this. But we thank you. I told Frank I was going to say this. You know what it's like. It's the warm, sometimes a little bit sappy feelings around Christmas. And those are great. Those things really are wonderful because we are drawn closer to other people, sometimes in a deep way, sometimes in sort of surface sentimental ways. Whatever it is, love abounds at Christmas time. So we've been working through Advent, and we've talked about hope, and we've talked about peace, and we've talked about joy. And here on this final week of Advent, we're going to talk about love. And ask the question, is this the kind of love we're talking about when we read Scripture and talk about Advent love? Is it the puns on the cards and the sweet sentiments? Is that all there is to it at Christmas and kissing under the mistletoe and sweet cards? Is there more to it when we talk about Christmas love? So to do that, I want to take us to the book of Isaiah. In the book of Isaiah, of course, the book begins with the call of the prophet, the reluctance of Isaiah to serve, and the call of God on his life. And one of the next sections is these oracles against the other nations. So all these empires that were threats to the nation of Israel, there are these oracles, these threats against them. You're going to get it. And you start with the usual big bad suspects, Babylonia, Philistia, some of the names we have heard of. But then, in chapter 16, there's an oracle against the nation of Moab. And Moab gets a little less attention in the litany of big bad empires, mainly because they're not really an empire. They're a smaller nation. They share a border with Israel, you can see on the map. And these nations have, well, let's say a fraught history. There's a lot in the Bible about Israel and Moab and how they have gotten along and not gotten along. Way back to the book of Numbers, when the people in Moab get wind that Israel's coming for them, that God has promised them some land, and it happens to be ours, and they're not sure how they feel about that, so the king, Balak, wants to go pronounce judgment against them, and that's where you get the story of Balaam and the donkey, the talking donkey. Then fast forward to the time of the kings, and King Ahab of Israel dies, and Moab, who's kind of like a vassal state, they see the opportunity, and they go, oh, we can seize on this. The king's dead. Let's go against them, and let's get rid of the nation of Israel. And in a rare move of unity, Israel and Judah come together and defeat Moab. But then just 100 years after that, Moab discerns a threat from the big empire of Assyria, and so they form an alliance with Israel. And then there's the whole story of Ruth. And can you or can you not marry someone from Moab if you're an Israelite? All I'm telling you is that these nations have a history that has times of unity, times of discord. They're kind of frenemies, we might say. They get along sometimes, they don't get along at other times. And so that brings us to Isaiah chapter 16. And this is, well, it's not really an oracle against Moab so much as it is Moab crying out for help. They're under threat again. Isaiah doesn't tell us who the threat is, but they're under threat and they are crying out to Israel for help. So the beginning of Isaiah chapter 16 is written in the voice of Moab. And they say this, "Send lambs as tribute to the ruler of the land, from Selah, across the desert to the mount of daughter Zion. Like fluttering birds pushed from the nest, so are the women of Moab at the fords of the Arnon." That's the river between the two nations. "Make up your mind," Moab says. "Render a decision. Make your shadow like night at high noon. Hide the fugitives. Do not betray the refugees. Let the Moabite fugitives stay with you. Be their shelter from the destroyer." So the opening plea from Moab is, we're under threat. Maybe if we send some lambs as tribute, we can buy your protection, Israel, your alliance. And so the picture here is this: these women from Moab who are like fluttering birds. They're being scattered. They're threatened. It's a peaceful flock of birds, and then the threat comes, and they scatter away. And what Moab is saying is, please make a decision as to whether or not you will be a safe place for the refugees who need to come across the border because of the threat that is happening. Make up your mind whether or not you will shelter these people who are under threat. It's not a request for military intervention, it's a request for safety. Israel, will you be a safe harbor for our people who are threatened? So this picture is of Moab who is seeking protection when their whole way of life is collapsing around them. And then the voice changes in Isaiah. Not sure if this is God's answer or if it's Moab continuing to voice its hopes. But pay attention to the language of this next section. "The oppressor will come to an end and destruction will cease. The aggressor will vanish from the land. In love, a throne will be established. In faithfulness, a man will sit on it. One from the house of David, one who in judging seeks justice and speeds the cause of righteousness." So this poetic language looks forward to a time when a new person will be on the throne of David who will assure justice and righteousness. It's a salvation and a rescue for all of the people. That's what this king will be like. He will shelter the vulnerable. He will terminate oppression. And all this is done, Isaiah says, in love. The throne is established in love. That word love is the chesed word, the steadfast faithfulness. It's the love of the refrain in Psalm 136, the love that endures forever. And so in this passage, love is freeing captives, welcoming refugees, and turning things upside down. It's hopeful, but it has legs. It's doing something. That is Isaiah 16's version of the coming king who will sit on David's throne. Someone who is established in love and who will change the fate of people. 60 years ago, CBS aired a special in December called Christmas in Appalachia. It aired on a Monday night, narrated by their correspondent, Charles Kuralt. And what he did was go visit these devastated mining towns in eastern Kentucky, who 10 years before were thriving, but due to automation and other factors, were just mired in poverty. And he went around and was interviewing people and talking about what Christmas would be like in a season of absolute poverty and devastation. And we're going to watch in a minute, a few moments of that video. It'll be easy for you to think with the black and white picture and the abject poverty that this is from Depression era United States, but it's not. It's from the mid-60s. So on the same Monday night that CBS aired this special, Johnny Carson would have been doing Christmas spectacular from Studio 6B in New York City, right where Jimmy Fallon does The Tonight Show. There would have been glitz and glamour and celebrities. And the contrast is pretty stark. And in this video, you're going to meet a man named Hiram Mitchell. Hiram runs a store in that town, and he will be the bulk of what you see. But I want you to pay attention to this man and what he's doing during Christmas time, 1964, in Appalachia. So take a few minutes and watch this video. I don't know if you caught the quote at the beginning of that video where Kuralt says, "When hard times come, love goes out the window." And if love is just a warm sentiment, that's true, isn't it? You just got to buckle down and focus on paying the bills and getting things done. We don't have time for flowery things. We don't have time for sentimental cards. But I think there's something different going on here. I think for Hiram Mitchell, when hard times came, love went to the forefront for him. What you don't know in that video about him is that he's not had it easy. 20 years before you see him in this video, his first wife died of tuberculosis. And then at this point in his life, all of his grown children have scattered to bigger cities for work. So none of his immediate family is left. And here's little Hiram Mitchell, a nobody in Kentucky, who's choosing to take an economic hit to feed people who don't have food. And in fact, after this special aired, people were so moved that people across the country sent food and money and clothing to these little counties that were featured in this video. That the love that they saw displayed moved them to make a difference for these people. This is, I think, what Christmas love means as depicted in the scriptures and depicted in these videos. It's an ordinary person who chooses to change the outcomes for other people. So it's people we know, like Oscar Schindler, who puts his life at risk to shelter persecuted Jews during World War II. It's people like Malala Yousafzai, who at age 15 was shot by the Taliban for speaking out against oppression. And it's people who aren't famous either. It's people like little Hiram Mitchell, a nobody from backwoods Kentucky, who takes a hit in his pocketbook to provide for hungry people. That is what Christmas love is. It flips the script. It flips the script. It's not just some sweet sentiment on a card. It's following the God who sent his son to flip the script and make a real difference. This kind of love is where oppression ends and refugees are sheltered and hungry people are fed and humility wins the day. It's the kind of love that Mary talks about in her song. When she finds out that she will have God's son, she says these words: "He has scattered the proud and brought down rulers, but he's lifted up the humble. He sent the rich away empty, but he's filled the hungry." That is flipping the script. Or it's songs that we sing like "O Holy Night," where the words in the third verse tell us that truly he taught us to love one another. His law is love. His gospel is peace. Chains shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease. And you know, the first time people in church ever sung that song, they might have gone up to Mr. Capo, who was the writer, and said, "Hey, could we just stick with like decking the halls and babies in a manger? You're kind of getting political with this Christmas music." That is Christmas love. It is flipping the script. So in the last segment of that video, you heard Kuralt go through different groups of people, and he says, "A million people are waiting." That is what Advent is about. It is about waiting for what is to come, for the script to flip, for people who are oppressed to be set free. So our wait is a little bit different, though, isn't it? We kind of live in a season of perpetual Advent, and then we're reminded every year of the coming of Jesus. So he has come. He's already begun flipping the script, and now we've got to figure out what part we will play in the Christmas story of flipping the script. I don't know where you are in life. Could you use some of your power and influence to lift up someone who is oppressed? Could you use your status, your boldness, to challenge a situation or a system that's keeping someone underfoot? Could you show your love to someone in a way that flips expectations, where everyone else is expecting judgment, and you show love and mercy and grace? And could you, in whatever way you're called to do, act in faith, knowing that every beginning of flipping the script starts with small, steady steps? Someone out there is waiting on you. And the question today is, what will your Advent love look like for them?